Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way back to our conversation here, well, a new conversation we're about to start on Malcolm X, we'll remind you that support for the Mark Steiner Show comes from the Maryland State Education Association. The Maryland Dream Act makes sure kids who graduated from a Maryland high school and whose parents have paid taxes for at least 3 years can pay in-state tuition. No matter how you decide you want to vote, the vote takes place on November the 6th, and you need to vote. Voters can get to determine if some of our Maryland students can seek a higher education. More information about ballot question 4 can be found at educatingmarylandkids.org. We are joined here in studio. I am joined by my dear friend and co-hosts from time to time. Not enough times, as far as I'm concerned, Dr. Lester Spence, Associate Professor of Political Science and Africana Studies at Johns Hopkins University, author of the book Stare in the Darkness, The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics. And two other professors from Morgan State University here who have written a book called A Lie of Reinvention, Correcting Manning Marable's Malcolm X. And we are joined here in studio by Dr. Jared Ball, co-editor of the book, Associate Professor of Communication Studies here at Morgan State University, and Dr. Todd Burrows, also co-editor, a lecturer here in Communication Studies, what was that, at Morgan State University. Gentlemen, good to have you both in the studio.
Thank you.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
So this mic sounds weird. We have this. It sounds like we got a big echo going on here. Let's try to do something about that. All right. Okay, back there. Threw me off for a minute.
Sure.
But I'm back. So let's talk about why you two took on this task first, just to make it just in general, about why you took on the task of challenging this book written by Manning Marable on Malcolm X.
I would say it's a funny story, but it's actually very tragic. We were very excited about this book. I remember running down to D.C. at 9 o'clock at night trying to get this book, basically one or 2 days after it came out. And I got it, and being a historian, I was taught by a historian who's also an expert on Malcolm X, Mr. Paul Lee, to that historian always
the brother of Suni Khaled.
Right, the brother of Suni Khaled, all right? I was taught by Paul Lee to always read the back of a book first to see what sources they used, to see what, you know, what resources they had to make their argument. So I started going in the back of this book, and I could not believe it. I was so upset and was wondering what to do. Now, of course, I knew what to do. I contacted my friend and colleague, Dr. Jared Ball, who has a radio show on WPFW, 89.3 FM of the Pacifica Foundation. And we did a radio show with Richard Prince of journalism's column fame.
Right.
And we started to discuss this book, and we wound up for about a week or 2 weeks or so basically leading the national criticism of this book. And then that allowed us to look at ways on what to do. And then Jared got a phone call from
Paul Coates at Black Classic Press, who invited us to put together a critical set of responses. So the one correction I would want to make from your intro is that we've edited this book.
Yes,
I just want to make sure everybody's clear that it's an edited collection of essays, in part because that's what we were asked to do, but I think even more importantly because we didn't think this was something that one individual should try to take on, that we thought it should be a collective, collaborative response. We had seen similarly timed and then published before ours, a Third World Press collection that we thought was good and strong, but left some holes that we needed to try to fill. And that's really what it was. And if I could just say very quickly that Todd mentioned the radio show that I do. I just wanted to echo the efforts here to get people to pledge their support to EAA. I don't often think people understand enough how essential these alternative sources of communication are. We're often encouraged to believe with the internet and social media that that is the all leveling playing field panacea, and it's not. We need these entities to exist. So I do. I just wanted to put that little plug of solidarity.
88. Go ahead.
But that was essentially it. And I just want to say to extend Todd's story back a little bit. We had been part of a group of people who had been for years following whether it was Gregory Lee's collection of Malcolm's missing papers and the lost chapters, so to speak. It is Greg Lee, right? Oh my goodness!
I'm not sure the last name, but
now I just now I need to double check that. The lawyer in Detroit,
Gregory Reed.
Reed, thank you. Oh, goodness gracious! And then also as Marable over the last maybe I don't know 5 to 10 years had started to more promote the fact that he was working on his book and would soon be coming out with it. We were part of a group of people who were extremely excited to see this book come out. We were not in advance critical. We were not in advance. Even concerned, at least I'll speak for myself, I was not at all concerned what would come out. But once the book did come out, once we saw the early criticisms from Carl Evans, and once we started to get into the book itself, we found many more problems that we thought needed to be addressed, in part to defend what we understand to be the legacy of Malcolm X himself. But for me, it's also because I thought it was necessary to make a comment about his radical ideas and the value that they have and still hold in 2012, as people are picking up in many ways they're coming new to social movement and political struggle with the occupations and so on and the like efforts. We thought it was important that they be given an opportunity or another opportunity. I'm saying we're certainly not the only one. To confront and struggle and grapple with these kinds of ideas in ways that are not often encouraged. So, and here we have. I think we put together a great book. I'm very proud of it, and I think the contributors have done a great job. Our editors, I think, did a good job, and I think our editors with Black Classic Press did a great job. And I'm very excited.
So we have to take a break in about 2 minutes here, but in that short period, I want to come back to it as well to lay out much more precisely what it was about Manny Marable's book that forced you to want to edit this volume and find people to take it on.
Well, we have 2 minutes. I'll take one. as a historian. Manning Marable is a master historian, and clearly there were some problems with him personally. Perhaps he bit off more than he can chew. He originally had set out to do a political biography of Malcolm X, which is a theme biography, and somehow he got a major book contract to do a full biography. He became ill, very ill, as in he was on an iron lung for the last year of his life.
Right, Manning was.
Right. And so something happened because he had the resources, at least in terms of he had 25 people helping him on this book. He did not have any major grants. And you can tell, unfortunately, because here's what he did not do. He did not travel anywhere out of the United States to interview anybody who had dealt with Malcolm X. He only interviewed, as Raymond Winbush of Morgan State University.
Who's in this book.
Right, who's in this book. Raymond Winbush says he's only interviewed about 13, 15 people.
Something like that, yeah.
A book like this, you're supposed to interview 100 to 1,000 people. You're supposed to get major grants. And what you are definitely not supposed to do is you are not supposed to take secondary sources and even worse, secondhand versions of secondary sources and use that to buttress your argument for a biography. Now, there are many other ideological problems with this book that I know will come back on the other side.
We will. I think a very brief break to come back and talk about WEA, your public radio station. Stay with us, and we'll come back to our conversation about this really interesting edited collection, A Live Reinvention, Correcting Manning Marable's Malcolm X. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're going to continue our conversation here with our two guests, Dr. Jared Ball, Dr. Todd Stephen Burroughs, who edited the book, A Lie of Reinvention, Correcting Manning Marable's Malcolm X. On our way to the conversation, I'll remind you, we want to thank Baltimore's own Black Classic Press for their generous donation of copies of A Lie of Reinvention for our fund drive. You can visit their website. They have incredible stuff. Paul Coates, when he started this, has discovered, I can't tell you, the dozens of books he's discovered written by African Americans in the 18th century, 17th That's right. century, 16th century. Incredible. So visit their website, which is at www.blackclassicbooks.com, and we'll link to that on our website as well.
And, you know, he went over every word of this book.
I'm sure. I know Paul. I'm sure he did.
And he is the invisible contributor to this book, and we definitely thank him for his contribution.
All writers should get editing like we got.
That's right.
Paul Coates is
especially these people who write on the web.
Yes, they should learn how to
be
write.
Be included.
Yeah, I resemble our remark.
Right, exactly.
So, but yeah, but you both, you know, learn how to write. So people need to learn how to write. Anyway, back to the book.
So
Jared Ball, continue where Todd left off.
We sort of left off. I mean, my biggest critique with the book began actually similar to what Todd was saying, the way we read the book. When I read the epilogue to the book, I became most concerned because it's in the epilogue that you see where Marable's politics as a social democrat really come out. And as he tries to align Malcolm X as part of the legacy, the political legacy of a Barack Obama. And regardless, I know we're not going to get into that tonight, but whatever you think about Obama, I think there has to be clear and distinct differences between where Obama and Malcolm X are politically. And I think rather than seeing one as the extension of the other, I think it's important to see one as not being able to exist with the other, not first being assassinated physically and then have his politics reassassinated in perpetuity after his physical assassination. So then when you go back through the book, you actually see, and it does take a careful read. I mean, Marable was not, as Todd was saying, he was a master historian. He was a great writer. He was by no means a fool. And we, as Paul Coates puts in our the introductory statement to our book, we are not calling him and his career a lie. We're very specific. And one of the things I really liked about what we did with this book, we are very specific and particular to this one work. Marable's book on Malcolm X. We are very clear with when we invited and accepted invitations or a request to submit to this book that we were only wanting contributions that were responses to the book itself, that people had to have read the book, and we're not going to comment as much as we could avoid it. We didn't want people rambling about their views on Malcolm and their this and that. We did the best we could with that. But ultimately, and the point being that we wanted to give it a close read, and I think it does take some skill and some knowledge of Malcolm X and some of the other literature to really that was written about Malcolm to really see what Marable does in this book. But it starts with the amounts of conjecture, the amounts of times that he says maybe and possibly, and then says things that are quite contradictory, like a strong circumstantial evidence. These kinds of phrases don't make any sense. And then when you look at the sourcing and the citation, they're not well done. They're not strong. They're not even accurate. And in some cases, they don't exist to support claims that he makes about Malcolm, about Betty. But more importantly for me, beyond the salacious claims that he makes about infidelity or Malcolm's alleged homosexuality, none of which is substantiated, by the way, more of it for me, the concern is how he frames Malcolm's politics. And how he takes very careful shots at all forms of radical politics, from the Garvey movement, including claiming I think it was Jacques Garvey was a murderer, to diminishing the importance of the Nation of Islam in terms of the Black freedom struggle, diminishing the anti-imperialism, anti-capitalist elements, the socialist elements. He diminishes and demeans them. He takes shots at Kwame Nkrumah just passingly. And then beyond that, he support his ultimate goal, I think, of and may not just be his goal. I mean, there are issues, I think, to be considered of the role Viking Press and Penguin Press play in this, one of the six largest publishing houses in the world, and his relationship with Columbia University and its institutional role vis-a-vis the Audubon Ballroom and radical politics in general. All of this, I think, has combined to, and of course what Todd said earlier about the man struggling with a serious illness, and writing a lot in those last years of his life that may have distracted him from this particular work. But what you end up getting is a very, again, a diminished, the radicalism of Malcolm is diminished. The careful selection of quotes and statements, one that I pick up on in the introduction, and then I'll stop here, is that to make his point that Malcolm X more or less predicted or prefigured the role Black people could play in electing a Black president, He claims that Malcolm called for the establishment of black voting blocks, that he would, you know, the OAAU, the Organization of Afro-American Unity, would go out and register black people to vote. But he leaves out the important part of the OAAU statement on that, which he does not include in his quote, which says that where Malcolm says, we are going to organize black voters as independent voters who will only vote for black candidates who support black people. That is decidedly different than trying to claim by the book's end that Malcolm would have wanted black people to be organized under the Democratic Party for a president quite like Barack Obama.
So we have about 2 minutes before we have to go to break. But let me let you start, Lester, and then we'll come back and finish when we come back from break.
Yeah, it's funny. I just went to a talk. We've got a visiting scholar from UCLA who's in charge of the Marcus Garvey papers. He's been the guy running Robert Hill, really dope. And he gave a talk about Marcus Garvey, and he talked about how, for a number of reasons, black American intellectuals starting, particularly the ones, the 50s era ones, E. Franklin Frazier, they ignore the fact that the UNIA, even in the United States, was primarily a West Indian movement, right? And I had no idea of this. And his argument was that the politics of that erasure, right, there's a certain politics in that erasure, in making it seem like it was all black American, as opposed to West Indian run, and then maybe later African, you know, people born in America got down with. Now, so I mentioned that to say that it's Manning Marable's project, it engaged in a similar process of erasure. And you guys are tackling that, but for people who aren't necessarily card-carrying scholars, who, you know, may just be familiar with Malcolm X through the autobiography, or maybe even just through the movie still, even though the movie's over 20 years old, what are the stakes of Manning Marable's project? Why is it important that you guys fix this?
Can I just say this gap?
I'm going to hold that thought, because we're going to take a break and come back so we can really get into it and also maybe explore the whole question of where the discussion of Malcolm X should take place from 2012 on, given everything you all just said and your editing, what Manning wrote, and especially what Lester just said at the end of this conversation during this segment. So we'll come back to all that when we come back from this break. We're about to talk to you about WEA, your public radio station. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I want to remind you on the way back to our conversation that the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development, where they can help make your home more comfortable and energy efficient this winter. Did you know that October is National Energy Awareness Month? Right here in Maryland, the Maryland Department of Housing offers low-interest loans, rebates, and other resources for low-income qualified residents, all to improve the energy efficiency of your home. So warm up to savings on your utility bill. Visit MDHousing.org or call 410-514-7530 for information or to see if you qualify. We are here. Dr. Lester Spence is in the house with us today, co-pitching and co-hosting with me during the course of these 2 hours. We're with Dr. Jared Ball and Dr. Todd Burrows, both here at Morgan State University. Jared is Associate Professor of Communication Studies at Morgan State University. Todd Burrows is Lecturer in Communication Studies at Morgan State University. They co-edited A Lie of Reinvention, Correcting Manning Marable's Malcolm X. Now, where did we leave off, gentlemen?
We were talking about
stakes.
And how black activists and black people who are committed to Malcolm can put together an oral history project, go out, interview people, create some primary source material that the next scholar can come and do the next biography. This will not be the last biography of Malcolm X. There are literally hundreds of biographies on Abraham Lincoln. There are at least 5 to 6 biographies on Martin Luther King. This is only the third major biography on Malcolm X. There will be more books on Malcolm X, but we need people who are committed to help bring this along.
But I also think that it's important because not only is it important just to re-engage Malcolm as much as possible for the moment, but, you know, Marable's book does intend to supplant the autobiography written as told to Alex Haley as the definitive work So throughout his book, there are many shots taken, not only at Alex Haley, but as he says on page 490, all of the books written about Malcolm X in the 1990s are dismissed as having had no value or no contribution, even as Marable borrows heavily from those books without necessarily proper attribution to reconstruct the narrative of the life and of the assassination of Malcolm X. So I think it's important that people read. We would argue that that Marable's book should be read, that the Third World Press book should be read, that our book should be read, and that they should all be taken as part of an individual or collective attempt to reconnect or learn about Malcolm X. But for me at least, it's very important that people, I think, reconsider the politics that Malcolm espoused, that inspired him, and that we revisit not only his ideology, but his programmatic attempts in 2012. They are not passé. All the conditions that he was trying to get rid of are in fact worse today.
Yeah. And so I want you to pick up where we left off at break. Well, you were the last thought, I think, is going to break.
Yeah. I mean, so one of the I remember when we talked about it at the panel, right? So I was one of those undergrad. I remember when Manning Marable was working. He's been working on this since I was an undergrad at Michigan. Like, since the late 80s, early 90s, he was talking about this project. So I, too, was waiting. But the one thing I remember, even going back to those early, when I was an undergrad, is whenever it would be the black left who would bring him, the black, and I've got massive respect for them, I wouldn't be here without them, but they had an anti-black nationalist project. And they would bring him, and he would speak to that anti-black nationalist project. So the first thing I was looking for in the book was to see how he dealt with black nationalism, long recognized as like the most misunderstood black political ideology, even though it's the default, right? So if you read it, it's like time and time again, he's like taking shots at black nationalism, not understanding. You know, so there's a way to talk about black nationalism that acknowledges that there are some parts of it that are deeply conservative, right? And that may and that actually are politically problematic, depending on how you find it. But there's this much broader strain that he consistently acts as if it doesn't, or the book consistently acts as if it doesn't exist.
And he is part of, unfortunately, a group of scholars who I argue in the CODA are doing a reverse intellectual gentrification. They are moving into white ideologies that allow quote-unquote new interpretations of the civil rights movement and the black power movement. Now, what are these new interpretations? These new interpretations are to take black nationalism and pan-Africanism and include them in the American hegemony. They do not need inclusion in the American hegemony. They are outside the American hegemony for a reason. They are providing a critique not only about the character of American democracy, but they question whether American democracy or America should exist.
Yeah.
And we cannot go back, or we cannot go forward in this way in which we're trying to make the red, black, and green the red, white, and blue. And the Marable biography is part of that.
Now, I know we have a very truncated show today, so there's so much of what I've been saying that we need a lot of time to really kind of get through all this. Yeah. But we're just putting it on the table today, folks, and we're going to come back to it very soon with a two-hour special and bring a bunch of guests in here along with our guest here today. You were about to say something, Lester.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
So now with that said, so I had a massive pushback against Marable's book, you know, some of which I was able to get off on the panel. So what I'd ask here, though, is it dawned on me recently that I am now older, and I don't consider myself old, but I am older than Malcolm X was when he was assassinated.
That's right.
Right? What are the challenges of putting so much weight on Malcolm X's historical figure, even though he was incredibly young when he came to a national stage, and not incredible, but he was still young and trying to figure stuff out when he was assassinated.
And one of the things we talked about before we went on the air, because I've read Manning Marable's book, I've read your book, the book that you edited, and I think I've probably read every book ever written on Malcolm X, saw him speak as a young man, was at his funeral, I mean, means a lot in my life, So, I mean, so he was very young. So we started talking about this. It started talking about if you look at let's say, just people who were massive figures in American history, in black history. If we think of Du Bois, who died at almost 100, and the changes, he didn't start out as a communist, but he ended his life as a communist and a nationalist living in Ghana, right? So the spectrum of his existence, and you can take many other people, we can talk about the spectrum of their existence. So Malcolm, again, was 39 years old. He was young. He's younger than some of my children. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
I'm
saying.
I mean, he's really young.
And what changes we go through. Should we take a break now? We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll pick up on that point. And Jared, I'll let you wax forth as soon as we come back, okay? Don't go away. We're going to continue our conversation with Jared Ball and Todd Stephen Burrows here with Lester Spence, the book Alive Reinvention, Correcting Manny Marable's Malcolm X. Don't go away. We'll be right back to talk about your favorite radio station. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are here to continue our conversation about Alive Reinvention, Correcting Manny Marable's Malcolm X, with its two editors, Drs. Jared Ball and Todd Stephen Burrows, who are here at the Communications Department of Morgan State University. My co-host these last 2 hours is Dr. Lester Spence, Associate Professor of Political Science and Africana Studies at Johns Hopkins University.
And Bellringer.
And author of the book Stare in the Darkness, The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics. On our way back to Jared, I remind folks again, we want to thank Baltimore's own Black Classic Press for their generous donation of copies of Alive Reinvention for a fund drive. They published the book, a company founded by Paul Coates, who's become a major businessman and community leader and an incredible human being. Please visit their website at www.blackclassicbooks.com. So, Jared, you were going to pick up.
Well, I mean, just on this idea, part of what we were trying to do with this book is try to respond to the debate that has been in existence since he was assassinated about what Malcolm's ideas were leading to or what trajectory was he taking. And that's part of what the argument is all about. We have to, I think it's important to remember that he was assassinated because of the trajectory he was on politically. And that the people who picked up the trajectory he was on politically after his assassination became the greatest threats to this country's national security. And many of them are still in prison to this day, which is why I mentioned political prisons earlier, because many of them are still in prison to this day, particularly because they were looking to extend, at least as they understood it, the politics and the program of Malcolm X. So which is why I think that it's important to keep that the debate around where he was going is not just, I think, an intellectual exercise. It's a debate about what is going to influence young, in this case, black minds who still gravitate to an image of Malcolm X and the symbol of Malcolm X as a leading radical figure. If that leading radical figure can, as I was trying to argue in my introduction and with some of my colleagues in this book, If that dominant version of where Malcolm was going can be neutered, can be liberalized, can be softened, then you have not only distorted the man and his ideas themselves, you have distorted the ability for them to impact generations subsequently. And I think it has been demonstrated over and over and over the power of Malcolm X to radicalize subsequent generations. So, yes, there's always, none of us can say definitively what he was going to do, where he was going to go. I think there is plenty of evidence that suggests where he was going, evidence that Marable does not include, including the origin of the name, for instance, of the Organization of Afro-American Unity, which is Bill Sayles told us in the 1990s, a book Marable dismisses, was initially to be the African-American Freedom Fighters and was going to be a guerrilla wing of the movement here in the United States, but his colleagues with RAM, the Revolutionary Action Movement, and others said you should change the name, and hence it was changed, and the overt nature of the OAAU became something else. But not to say that this is what we want to advocate, but it is important to put on the table as part of a discussion about Malcolm X and as a part about a discussion what people are going to do in the 21st century as they look to find themselves in this political struggle.
Malcolm X doesn't need reinvention. He doesn't need rescuing. He needs to be studied.
Or humanizing, as Marable says.
Or humanizing. Yeah. He needs to be studied.
I mean, I think that, unless you jump in here as well, but I mean, I think that Malcolm needs to be studied, and I think that there's a lot of room within the speeches of Malcolm X, the understanding of Malcolm X, the work of Malcolm X, that can be debated. People, you know, it's like when you, not to equate, I mean, no matter what the text is, mm-hmm. I don't care if the text is the Bible, if the text is Marx, if the text is reading The Economist, Hayek, or whoever you, Adam Smith, or whatever, or Du Bois, within the text these people have created, that there's room for huge debate on what that means.
Sure.
You know, it's not a singular. No one owns this.
But when you have a book, and it's one of the points, I'm sorry to interrupt just very quickly, several of our contributors, myself included, make about Marable's book is that when you, the book has been not only with the posthumous Pulitzer, but the very Noam Chomsky, Ed Herman-ish propaganda model promotion of the book in the mainstream and popular press, what you get is there the establishment, the powerful, the elite in this society trying to establish and solidify their version and to block off debate. They are very clear in not only the press coverage of the book, but the publisher's statements of the book, Marable's own statements of the book, that this is meant to be the definitive work that is supposed to be unchallengeable, which is why so much of the establishment press came out in support of it, which is why it made the bestsellers list of the New York Times, the Washington Post, and was given a Pulitzer. These are political rewards for having served the state, and that is ultimately what the book does. And as one of our contributors, Kamau Franklin, makes the point, when you read the autobiography, whatever you thought of it, when you finished the autobiography, you wanted to become militant and radical. When you finish this book, this that Marable has put together, you, I think, want to go and at most cast a vote for Barack Obama.
you know, we didn't. So the most contentious claim, which doesn't have, it has to do with politics and has to do kind of with a certain type of conservatism. American conservative in general, black conservatism specifically, has to do with a homosexuality claim, right? And this is one of the I had this from with a discussion. I got this from, this isn't me, but this is from a discussion with a sister who's who does really incredible work, a professor in Philly, and she was like, I find it interesting. So let's assume that Malcolm X did engage in sex with men in the market, right? If we were talking about a woman, what we'd be talking about is violence, right? We'd be talking about a certain type of sexual violence. And as much as sex workers aren't usually engaging in this practice out of their free will, they're kind of constrained. And it's a violence that occurs there. I find it interesting, and I never thought about this, right? That even if that was, and it's important, he doesn't substantiate it, but even if it was substantiated, why do you read it this way? As opposed to perhaps, you know, opposed to perhaps a form of sexual violence, particularly given that we rarely talk about black men as being the victims of sexual violence, right?
I mean, we invite people to read Greg Thomas's essay in this book, which I think Greg Thomas is one of the most brilliant scholars of our generation. That of course is consigned to the margins of the intellectual community. But he wrote a brilliant piece, and the only part that I can quote with any authority in terms of remembering and in terms of understanding all that he said is that Marable reduces sexuality to an accusation, and I think that line is brilliant and says a lot about what you're saying here. Yeah. But for me, the issue is the claim supported? And when you look at the footnotes, and when you look at it is completely unsupported outside of whether or not it was real, outside of whether or not it should mean anything in terms of people's appreciation of Malcolm X.
We should mention some more of the contributors: Mumia Abu-Jamal, A. Peter Bailey, A. Peter Bailey, who knew Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. And who was an aide to Malcolm X. So there are many serious contributors to this book.
And let me just say that I was waiting for Manning's book to come out. Mm-hmm. I loved his writing, much of his writing, and I disagreed with some of it, but I really liked his writing over the years. And when you both told me, mm-hmm. that you were working on this piece, I was waiting for this to come out, mm-hmm. because it's a discussion that we need to have. I appreciate the fact that both you men allowed us to start the conversation during the fund drive so we could help build the station.
That means
a lot to me as well.
Thank you.
And we have committed to bringing them back on alone again to talk about this book, maybe with some of the contributors to really go at it, having another two-hour special with some others as well to kind of debate the Malcolm and the book. So this is a continuing conversation. We hope to have some shows around that, maybe have a big blast off of this on May 19th. to celebrate Malcolm's birthday as well. So I want to thank both of you for coming here today, Jared Ball and Todd Stephen Burrows. Deeply appreciate you being part of this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And please, good luck with the pledge drive. Please, folks, get on the phone and make that pledge. Thank you very much.
And as always, Lester Spence, we're going to go into our pitch now, but thank you for agreeing to do this for 2 hours on a co-host and helping us get this through. Reminds you, the Mark Steiner Show is a production for the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy, Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Gunnery, Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer tonight by Andrea Melton. Our interns are Latrice Eddy and Marissa Edmond. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear their show again, podcast our future shows, any shows we've done in the past. Please, well, we can't get the future ones, they're not on there yet. You can visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And Republic Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Call 410-319-8888. Support WEAA. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.